I'd like to begin this hour, though, with a sound effect. Yes, if you've got a bird bath at your place or there's one in the park you'd like to visit, have you noticed if there are certain bird species that dominate it? In this case, it's sparrows, I think. Yes, it is. Almost 2,000 bird enthusiasts from across the country were part of a recent citizen science project where they kept track of which birds were ruling their backyard birth bath or bird bath. The results are in, and you might be surprised to see what's going on when it looks at the competition between urban and wild birds for those limited resources like water. And if you know your bird calls, then you would have course known that there's a list of bird bath bullies in various parts of the country. Dr. Grania Cleary has been leading the project. She's a research fellow with the Centre for Integrative Ecology at Deakin University. And Grania, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here and to talk birds.
Can you?
Birds.
Non-stop?
Non-stop. You're okay. Going to have to shut me up.
No, we don't want to. Not with that accent. It's lovely.
Thank you. Look,
I started today's program by talking about the fact that we often think that the Indian miner is the archenemy of all native birds in this country. We seem to focus on it being public enemy number one. Your citizen scientists have come back with some very interesting results.
Yes, actually, noisy miners or Indian miners weren't that common in bird baths. It's more the noisy miner.
Which are native.
That's the native ones. That's the grey one with the yellow eye. And he's native, but he's actually a big bully and is quite aggressive towards other birds as well.
Oh.
And he dominates bird baths up in the warmer states such as Queensland and Sydney. But down here in the cooler Victoria, as I found out, we have introduced birds dominating the bird bath, such as the spotted dove, the blackbird and the house sparrow. So the Indian miner doesn't seem to be that too much of a problem. It's more the native bullies.
That's intriguing. So if this gets into ethics here, if your bully at the bird bath is native, do we say that's the natural rhythm of things?
Well, that's just it. But you've also got to remember, in urban areas, we're kind of farming noisy miners. Tall eucalypts, lots of space underneath, hybrid grevilleas, all that increases these bully birds. And for the smaller birds, you need a lot of dense vegetation, places where they can go and hide. And the noisy miner, he is a bully and he will drive out the smaller birds and even birds his size. So
right.
Yeah, he is a bit of a bully. And down here we have red wattle birds that act as a bully around bird bats as well.
Which are native species.
Which are native species as well. So we call these urban adapters. They've done well with us. They live well with us. We're allowing them to thrive.
Right. It's
because we provide these resources that can be limited and the birds come and drink from the bird bath, but if water's limiting, you're going to have certain birds keeping other birds away. We even had a goshawk turn up on a bird bath.
So
I was not expecting that.
A bird of prey.
A bird of prey. And they're drawn to urban areas because of smaller birds like the house sparrows and rats. So they exploit the urban areas by coming in.
So we kind of want them around.
Yeah.
For some reasons.
Yeah. And we have them and they'll sit on the bird bath and of course there'll be no other birds around while he's hanging around. And then once he goes, you have the other birds coming in.
That's really intriguing. How big a sample did you get for the survey?
Now, I actually had a lot of people signing up. I had over 4,000 people sign up and 2,000 people take part. So I want it better this year, lads. I want lots and lots of people taking part. It was the first of its kind. Nobody knows about water. We had no idea do birds use it. And if you think in Australia, where drought is a problem and you know, climate change is a real problem.
And intense weather events where there's a lot of flooding too sometimes.
Exactly. And in different parts of the country, you have different things going on. So birds need water. Water might be more important than providing food. People often provide food, but maybe over here water's more important. In Ireland and the UK, we provide food. We're told to provide food because the natural food for the birds are gone because we've done so much clearing of the native vegetation.
Yeah.
And we also reward them for their songs. That's why we first started feeding birds. Birds would come and clear away agricultural pests.
That's right.
And we would keep them around and we would want to reward them. And people saw that birds weren't getting food in the winter and they were dying. So the big outpour of grief probably in the mid-1800s was to feed birds. And once we came over to Australia, we brought that with us, that idea of feeding birds. So we now feed birds and it's such an important human-wildlife interaction.
Well, let's just talk about this, Grania, because I'm very intrigued by this because this is the next arm of your citizen science.
This is the next arm, yes.
Yeah. So just harking back though to the water supply,
yes.
On that very issue first, if you set up a bird bath in your garden mm-hmm. and it becomes a focal point for local birds, mm-hmm. Do you then have a responsibility to maintain it?
Now, this is what my next, I'm just publishing my second paper, and that was actually maintenance around bird baths. And we found the Australian people seem to respond to the needs of the bird and will replace water frequently in the summer. Not so much in the winter, but they seem to know then the summer water is very important. So they will provide it. So yeah, birds do become reliant on it.
I was going to say, so if you set one up, then it's incumbent upon you to maintain it.
Well, it wouldn't be very nice if you didn't, because the birds find that water. And
they start to breed accordingly, don't they?
Yes. And don't forget that you need water to clean their feathers. So even when it's raining or it's cold, they still need to have baths. Grooming is very important to them to clean their feathers.
So, okay, so that's one question answered. In that regard then, are you encouraging more of us to set up bird baths?
Oh, absolutely. And we found in my study that Australian people like pedestal bats, and they're your traditional bats that are off the ground.
Yeah.
And that's probably for protection from cats and that. But you can have other bird bats where they're on the ground. But if you're in a fairly urban area and there's cats around, you're better off putting up pedestal bats. And yes, if you want to increase birds to your garden, provide water, maybe instead of food.
Yes.
I know a lot of people do provide food, and, you know, we're looking. We want responsible feeding. You know, like responsible drinking.
What does that mean?
Responsible drinking. Don't drink 6 pints of Guinness around the corner, PJ O'Brien.
Is that why you left Ireland?
I found a Guinness over here as well. So responsible feeding.
Okay, and, all right.
Providing water's better.
Well, I want to get into the food in a moment, but one thing I wanted to ask too about bird baths is if you're seeing a preponderance of noisy miners being the bullies down up north, was that up north?
Yeah, in Sydney north, and Queensland especially.
And then some of the introduced species down south.
Yeah.
How do we need to change vegetation to change the bully pattern? Is that what the key is?
So that is a key, and that's one thing we're going to look at. So people will plant native plants, thinking, okay, I'm going to increase birds.
Right.
But I'll often plant a hybrid Griffilias, which is a plant that gives constant nectar back to the bird.
The honey eaters love those.
And they love those, especially the noisy miners, and they'll actually dominate them. So you've got to, we're looking at, you know, getting people to plant other kind of plants that's more natural in their region, so they'll get more of the natural birds in their region. Because I can't say plant this plant, because Australia is so different. You know, Western Australia is completely different.
That's right. And what might be native in WA is actually a weed in New South Wales.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we've got to plant what was native there. And it was only in the mid-70s people decided to move away from native vegetation and brought in more European plants. And we think that probably increased the introduced birds as well. But that's now flipping back to where people want more native plants.
Okay. So when you plant native, by all means. I mean, apart from anything else, they're water tolerant often.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that try and provide the kind of ground cover that means that the smaller birds that can be bullied have somewhere to hide.
Exactly. Because they all put around more bird bats. That's the other thing. I've had my citizen scientists coming to me saying, I've got 2 bird bats and 2 completely different, you know, species of bird use them.
So how
the noisy miner has his one, his territory, his water, and you have these little birds on another bird bat in a different part of the garden.
So you've got the Irish theme pub for the noisy miners, you know, with lots of big drinks going over the bar.
Exactly.
And then you've got the smaller salubrious round the corner dark hotel, lobby maybe, with nice comfortable chairs.
Exactly.
And subdued lighting.
Yes, for things like New Holland honey eaters, Eastern robins, superb fairy wrens, all those little birds we want to be hanging around our garden.
I love this conversation. We're talking here about the power of citizen science to divulge to not only myself and you listening at home, but my guest, Dr. Grainne Cleary, who is a research fellow from the Centre for Integrative Ecology at Deakin University, about the behaviours around bird baths, who are the bullies, who are not. And it sounds like the Indian miner's got a bit of a bad rap, and really it's the noisy miner that is often at fault. In the meantime, let's get on to food now, because this really is, from my perspective, a bit of an ethical quagmire.
Oh, yeah.
So, responsible food.
Responsible bird feeding. First of all, I actually found the first recording of bird feeding was in the 6th century up in Scotland in Fife. A monk used to feed pigeons, and he eventually got one pigeon tame enough that it would come looking for food. That's how old this human-wildlife interaction is.
And then he killed it and ate it as squab.
Oh, I'm sure he didn't.
Sorry. Okay, my apologies.
But anyway, so this idea of feeding is so important that it's not something we're going to say, don't do, because people do it. And you have these amazing parrots coming down, you know, eating your seed. But what we're looking at is we need to know what's going on. What are people feeding birds? Mm. What birds are coming? Do we have dominating birds at bird feeders as well?
Yes.
You know, do we have, are we feeding birds hoping to increase little birds, but all we're doing is increasing minors? We need to know. We know we have lorikeets eating meat. You know, we never knew lorikeets ate meat, and they're probably looking for protein, because don't forget, they need protein as well, not just the nectar.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's all this stuff going on that we don't know about because it's happening in people's back gardens. So we need citizens, we need you to tell us what's going on.
So you need to be honest then about what you're feeding them. Don't, I mean, no one's going to be judging you.
No, God, no. Let the science be true. Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Well, no, I like no judgment here.
Let the science be true.
I mean, I'm feeding two spotted doves. I live in Richmond. I have two spotted doves and a bunch of house sparrows. That's all I see. You know,
you're feeding house sparrows?
And they come down. Well, I, you
shame
have to
on
get,
you. Shame
no,
on you,
no.
Grania.
Excuse me, I'm a scientist. You've got to get into your mindset of the scientist. And the scientist has to think like the animal is studying. I'm studying human behaviour.
Okay.
I need to feed to find out what people get out of it. And it is so rewarding. I have this sparrow or this spotted dove that comes down looking for the food, looks at me. You know, and I know he's introduced and we're not meant to like him, but, you know, we brought him over here. They're
not his fault.
With us.
Yeah,
he's just trying to survive in a hard world as well. So I throw him out a few seeds.
I've got people texting in as we're talking, Grania,
cool.
And I think, honestly, you could stay for the rest of the month.
I would love that.
Greg has texted in to say, Michael, my bird bath bully is a willy wagtail.
Oh, yeah.
And often seems to wait until other birds arrive. No offence intended, but could your guest slow down a little, please?
Oh, I know. I'm sorry.
She
I
did,
speak
yeah,
very
Grania
fast.
Did say that she gets excited, and that's because she's fantastic. And Greg said, you're too interesting to miss out on.
Oh, thank you so much.
There you go. JC says, I saw a wallaby in my bird bath.
Yes.
Reaching for native currants growing next to it, no birds joining it.
Wow. Wow. And we've had koalas and bird bats as well. So a lot of native species used, and possums as well.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll be
so you're recruiting now for the next study, which is about the food.
Australia, off Victoria even.
No, Australia.
Australia.
We're nationwide here.
Brilliant. Australia, I need you guys to join up in this study. Why don't you provide water, food, or boat? Go to feedingbirds.org.au. So feedingbirds.org.au and register. I'll be in touch with you then once the survey gets started. But the more people I have, the more reliable the data is. So I really, really need the public, because we need to work together to solve this problem, to get good guidelines to responsible feeding.
So when it came to water, you had 2,000 participants.
Yeah.
Is that enough for feeding?
No, I would like more. And I would like more from the likes of Western Australia and Tasmania and the Northern Territory. I had a lot in Southeast Queensland, more maybe up Northern Queensland. Just need a good spread so we know. We even had a cassowary turn up in a bird bath. I swear to God, and he didn't believe the record when he came in. I said, no, somebody's pulling me leg here. So I went and looked, and there you go, a picture of a cassowary in a bird bath.
Oh, I want to see that.
I know, it's brilliant.
Can you send that photograph to us?
Absolutely.
We'll put it up online. We'd love to see it. I think everybody would.
Yeah.
Grania, you have to come back and tell us how it goes, because you're recruiting now, but the study's in July.
I'm recruiting now. I have to get the people interested now. And the study we're looking at starting the end of July, the beginning of August. We're looking at winter to summer to see, do people change food? Do different birds come in different season? What's exactly going on?
So we need to know. Well, I'm going to finish now again with that sound effect, because now I know you feed sparrows. I'm going to have to...
They came from Ireland anyway.
With you.
With me.
On the plane.
I grew up listening to them.
Come back soon, huh?
I would love to. Thank you so much.
Dr. Grania Cleary, and she's a research fellow for the Centre for Integrative Ecology at Deakin University. We'll put that link up again. Say it again.
Feedingbirds.org.au. And that's if you provide water or food.
Feedingbirds.org.au. You heard it here first on RN Afternoons.
Want to hear about the best party in town this election season? It's a new podcast with me, Frank Kelly.
And me, Patricia Carvelis.
The Party Room, your essential guide to this federal election. Subscribe now. Simply search for The Party Room in your podcast app.
Or listen via the RN website, abc.net.au/RN.